Hello and welcome to the Auditory Chronicles podcast, a monthly program bringing you short tales for your listening pleasure. I'm your host, John McKenzie. In this episode, we bring you an adaptation of a short story published in 1900. The story begins as a young man is called into his boss's office.
His Last Day, adapted from the short story by Matthew White, Jr.
Maybe he's going to give me a raise.
This was young Ned's first thought when his employer asked him to step back into his private office one rainy Saturday morning. He had been expecting an increase in his pay for several weeks now.
"Let me see," Mr. McGillivane said as Ned reached his office. "You have been with me for just about a year now, haven't you, Ned?"
"Yes, sir. A year tomorrow."
Ned tried not to look too happy and expectant.
"At the end of a year, one naturally looks for a change of some sort to be made,"
Mr. McGillivane continued, trimming his fingernails.
"How strangely he acts about it,"
thought Ned.
"He talks as if he thinks it necessary to apologize for increasing my pay."
Ned pictured himself telling the story at home. He would make them laugh over it. Mr. McGillivane now kept silent for so long that Ned thought he might be perhaps waiting for a reply. So he said,
"Yes, sir."
Finally, the tailor went on.
"Sometimes, you know, Ned, businessmen are obliged to do things that are disagreeable because it is their duty to themselves and their families. Duty, young man, often wears a stern face. She wears that face for me this morning."
Ned felt as if somebody had suddenly thrust his warm hopes into a snowbank. Mr. McGillivane would never talk in this strain if he was going to raise an employee's salary. It must be he was going to reduce it. Ned's disappointment was so keen it seemed to him that it must show on his face, and he turned partly away so as to hide it. He wondered at what new point they could economize at home. They had already been reduced to a pass where each penny was weighed in the balance of expediency before being spent.
"Of course I shall be willing to give you the best of testimonials."
Ned heard this as if almost in a dream. It was not a reduction then, but something worse than that, a dismissal. The room seemed to swim around him. Was it the same place into which he had walked not 5 minutes before, with such exalted expectations?
"Do you mean to discharge me, Mr. McGillivane?"
he asked, determined to have all doubts set at rest forthwith.
"Don't put it so harshly, Ned,"
was the reply.
"Make it laid off. Times are so dull, positively injustice to myself and my family, as I said before. I must get rid of somebody, and as you were the last one to be taken on, you must be the first one to be laid off. It is fair, is it not?"
Ned was compelled to admit,
"Yes, that is only fair to the others."
"Of course you will stay till we close tonight,"
the clothing merchant continued, as though he were conferring a favor by giving the permission.
"And meantime, I will write you a letter of reference and have it ready to hand to you with your salary."
Taking this as an indication that the interview was at an end, Ned went back to his work in the store proper. How wearily the morning dragged. There were few customers because of the storm. The clerks stood about in knots, talking quietly to one another. Towards noon, Ned's attention was attracted by a young man with a valise in his hand who seemed to be having some sort of an argument with Sanderson, one of the store clerks. Ned was sorting over a pile of vests on the other side of a table by which they were standing and could not avoid hearing the whole conversation. The young man told Sanderson that his overcoat had been stolen from the train at Albany while he was out having breakfast. The young customer with a satchel continued, saying that he wanted to order another overcoat immediately. Sanderson told the young man that, as a rule, he would require a deposit. The young man agreed and said that if the coat were to cost $60, he would leave a deposit of $40. He then began fooling through his pockets, then stopped suddenly and looked at Sanderson with an expression of dismay. The customer exclaimed to Sanderson that the scoundrel who took his coat took all of his loose cash with it, except for some small change and a $5 bill he had in his trousers pocket. The young man's expression softened as he remembered that he had a check for $100 that his uncle, Horace McCracken, sent him for his 21st birthday. Horace McCracken was one of the best-known merchants in the leather district of New York, and his name was good for any amount. Sanderson took the check almost reverently, though he said that he would have to consult the store manager. The young McCracken said that he would make the check over to the store for $60 change, saving him the trouble of going to the bank to get it cashed.
What a fortunate fellow, poor Ned thought, as Sanderson disappeared into Mr. McGillivane's office. To get birthday presents of $100 checks, he can afford to have his overcoat stolen. Anxious to get a better look at such a favorite of fortune, Ned stole a glance at the customer around the high pile of vests. He forgot to take note of his general appearance, however, as soon as Ned saw the expression on the young customer's face. A sardonic smile of triumph mingled with a look of eager expectancy convinced Ned that something was amiss. "But what business is it of mine?" he told himself. "I'm not supposed to wait on customers, and besides, this is my last day here. And anyway, 10 chances to 1, Mr. McGillivain won't honor the check, so I needn't bother my head about it. All the same, I believe the customer's a swindler." Ned went on with his work, but stopped it again a moment or two later when Sanderson came back with the announcement that Mr. McGillivain would be very glad to accommodate any relative of Horace McCracken. And peering around a pile of vests again, Ned saw the clerk count out 6 $10 bills. "He's going to give him the $60, Ned said to himself. "That check's a forgery, I'm sure of it." But what could Ned do? Here he was, the youngest employee in the store, and a discharged one at that. How ridiculous would it be for him to go to Mr. McGillivain and tell him that he had made a mistake in trusting this alleged nephew of the great leather merchant Horace McCracken? But he could not put the thing out of his mind. "What if I could show him to be a swindler before I said anything to Mr. McGillivain about it?" was the next thought that came to him. But how could this be done? There was no time to lose. The customer was going through the form of selecting the cloth for the overcoat, but Ned could see that he was eager to get away. He had accomplished his purpose, and every moment now spent in the store made detection more imminent. What if Ned could contact Mr. McCracken and find out if he had signed that check? Ned dropped the vests and hurried back to the coat closet for his hat. Nobody paid any attention to his leaving the store, since Mr. McGillivain frequently sent him out on errands. He ran as soon as he reached the sidewalk on his way to the drugstore at the corner. "I want to telephone," Ned cried, rushing into the pharmacy. He speedily got the number he wanted and ascertained that Mr. McCracken was in, but then the clerk on the wire insisted on knowing who wanted to speak with him. "That doesn't matter," Ned replied finally. "Just ask him if he ever signed a check of $100 for Horace McCracken Jr., who claims to be his nephew." The clerk put Ned on hold and he waited. 1, 2, 3 minutes. His heart beating with great thumps as he felt how likely it was that that suspicious fellow might even now have already left Mr. McGillivain's store. Then came a clicking in his ear and the welcome announcement that Mr. McCracken never signed any such check. It was a forgery. Ned never stopped to ring off. He tossed a dime and a nickel on the counter and rushed out as though he had received an electric shock from the telephone wire. Ned had just come within sight of Mr. McGillivain's store when he saw that the imposter had already left and was more than half a block away, walking rapidly in the opposite direction. Ned's first impulse was to dash forward and seize him by the arm, but he recalled that even yet he had no visible proof of the man's guilt. Slowing up a little, he walked on just fast enough to keep his man in sight. He would track him until he entered some place for lunch. It was nearly 1. Then he would hurry back to the store and send Sanderson to him. Reaching Bryant Square, the imposter caused Ned's heart to stand still by going up to the driver of a hansom and entering into a conversation with him. In another moment, he had leapt in and was being rapidly driven away by the horse-drawn taxi. Ned forced himself to think with the rapidity of lightning. It would be too unfortunate to lose his prey now, just for the lack of a bold stroke on his part. His resolution was formed in a trice. Hurrying up to the cabman whose hansom stood behind the space the other had just occupied, he said, "I want you to follow him without his knowing it. Will you do it?" The cabman nodded, Ned jumped aboard, and in the next instant, they were off. It was the first time Ned had ever ridden in a hansom in his life. Almost an office boy, a discharged one at that, and with only 15 cents in his pocket, he was riding around the streets of New York in a cab. If he only captured his man, he felt sure that Mr. McGillivain would cheerfully pay the carriage bill. That would be a mere bagatelle beside the $60 that would otherwise certainly be lost. But suppose the swindler should not stop for lunch, but should drive to a railway station and take a train out of the city? Who would pay for the hansom in that event? Suddenly, the other carriage was lost to view now. Ned felt as if he must spring out and continue the chase on foot. But a moment or two later, the forward hansom again appeared from behind a furniture van, and the next instant, to Ned's infinite joy, it halted in front of a restaurant. His own driver promptly stopped, and, getting out, Ned told the man to wait till he took an observation. Peering in at the door of the cafe, Ned made sure that his prey was seated at a table, then hurried back and ordered the cabman to drive with all speed to Mr. McGillivain's store. Arrived there, Ned startled clerks and customers by rushing breathlessly back to the private office. He burst in upon his employer with the announcement, "Mr. McGillivain, the man you trusted was a swindler. I've had a phone message from his uncle. I mean, the man who isn't his uncle. And he never gave him $100 for his birthday. He's at the Arena restaurant now, and I've got a hansom at the door. So please, have him arrested before he gets away." Mr. McGillivain was completely astounded by the sudden outbreak on the part of the young man he had discharged a few hours before. But when Ned went on to explain the steps by which he had brought matters to their present pass, the merchant began to find necessity for hurrying into his overcoat. Within 5 minutes, Mr. McGillivain, Sanderson, and Ned were all three in the hansom, the driver of which decided that he had indeed struck a bonanza. Ned felt very much like the hero of some blood-curdling story as he marched into the restaurant at the head of his little procession and halted at the table where sat the bogus nephew of the great leather merchant. A policeman brought up the rear, and at the sight of him, the young swindler turned as white as the tablecloth, and there was no necessity of bringing on an array of proofs before the arrest could be made. But Mr. McGillivain decided that he ought to take the young man before Mr. McCracken, and bidding Sanderson and Ned return to the store, he went off to the leather district with the prisoner and the policeman. Ned was a hero for the rest of the afternoon. Sanderson told the other clerks what he had done, and they all assured him that his salary would be raised as a reward of merit. Ned smiled incredulously, but said nothing about his having been discharged. Mr. McGillivain came in at about 3 o'clock.
"Ned,"
he said, as he passed his way to his private office,
"that fellow was just the sort of rascal you believed him to be. He won't trouble anybody for some time to come. And I want you to believe something else. Imagine that you resigned your position this morning, and that I refused to accept it. I ask you now to reconsider and to stay with me at double your former salary. Will you accept?"
And Ned was almost as much pleased at the delicate way in which his employer took him back as he was at his reinstatement.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of His Last Day, as read by JT. Be sure to join us next month for another tale of mystery and wonder. In the meantime, feel free to visit our website at auditorychronicles.com for more information about the show, as well as links to our Twitter feed and Facebook page. For Auditory Chronicles, I'm John McKenzie. Thanks for listening.